We're here on Daf Tzadites on the base, and we started with the sugya of Rabbi Yochanan. Let's see if we can sort of remind ourselves of what Rabbi Yochanan says. Omar Rabba Bar Bar Chana Uvda Havi. Yeah, well, let's go even earlier to that, just to review what we did, but to get us on the right page. Omar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Rabbi Yochanan, Tabach Uman Shekilkel. Chai. Vafilu hu uman kitaboche tzipori. So this is a big chiddush because we've been pushing the agenda that if someone is an absolute expert, he's an uman, then he doesn't have to pay. Although we did have a statement of Shmuel that seemed to indicate that he does pay, even though he's a shomer chinam, because he's considered a mazik, he's considered a poshea. But that was the chiddush of Shmuel. Now it sounds like Rabbi Yochanan is adopting the same position as Shmuel. But the Gemara says that can't be, because umi omer Rabbi Yochanan hachi omer Rabba Bar Chana uvda havi kamed Rabbi Yochanan biknishta dema'on vi omer leizil aisiraya demamchis lutarnagolin vi eftarcha. So here we see that Rabbi Yochanan Paskin, that in terms of an uman who's an expert, he does not have to pay. Lo kasha kan b'chinam kan b'schar. So the bottom line is, it all depends whether he's paid for the shmira or he's not paid for the shmira. If he's paid for the shmira, as we said, that jacks up the level of shmira that he has to supply to the level of a shomer sachar, which means he's chayef for ke'ein gneva v'aveda. But if he's not paid, then we go back to the regular bottom base level of Shmira. That's what he's chayv to provide. And therefore, if he's an uman, he's potter. So again, just to summarize, we have Shmuel on the one hand and Rabbi Yochanan on the other hand. And we shouldn't combine the two. Never the twain shall meet. Because whereas Shmuel says that even if he's a shomer, he's a shomer chinam, nevertheless he's chayv, right? Nevertheless, he's chayv because there is some sort of element of pshia here. You know, that Shmuel is not willing to give him the benefit of the doubt and establish that since he's a mumcha, he's an absolute expert, therefore some sort of onus, some sort of extreme mitigating circumstance happened. Rabbi Yochanan, on the other hand, is willing to say that unless he's paid, if he's bechinam, then since the uman is an expert, and we assume he did everything he could possibly do, and he provided the kind of shmira and the kind of umnus that we expect him to, then whatever happened, whatever occurred, is considered an ones. And it's only when we jack up the level of shmira to this absolute level of a shomer sachar, because he's paid specifically to watch the object, guard it, and protect it, then he becomes chayev. Whereas, as we said before, according to Shmuel, even if he's a shomer chinam, nevertheless he's considered a poshea and he's chayev. So that's more or less where we're up to today.
Do we have to say he's being paid to be a shomer, or he's being paid for the act?
Yeah, he's kind of being paid for two things, according to this. He's being paid for both. See, Mitch, you're raising an important question. Was there an extra payment here for Shmira?
Yeah.
Or is it incorporated into the payment of the umnus?
Right.
That seems to be an issue that's going to come up over and over again in this sugya. So either way, I think it's a viable approach. I called it the buddy system, if you remember, that if he's doing it as a favor, gratis, then for sure he's not being paid. He's not even paid for the umnus.
Yeah.
And therefore he's a shomer chinam. Even in that case, Shmuel says he's chayav. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan would say you have to pay him. Now, your question is very valid. Is he being paid extra above and beyond, what you normally pay an uman? I'll throw in an extra pruta in order for you to provide the higher level of shmira. Or is it included, is it swallowed up in the dmei ha'umnus? So I'm paying you schiris for the work that you're doing. That includes returning the object to me, and up until the point that you return the object, I'm paying you to make sure that the object is in perfect shape.
But Shmuel's case, though, can't be to do with payment. It can't be to do with being paid. So
right, Shmuel is like the buddy system kind of thing. You know, whereas I'm doing you gratis, I'm doing you a favor. So then you're certainly a shomer chinam.
No, so then why is he liable?
He's liable because apparently Shmuel accuses him of not doing what he should do. In other words, Shmuel looks at the final result, the shechita, became an avela. Why didn't you guarantee that the shechita would be the best? Apparently, you didn't do the best job that you could have. Rabbi Yochanan turns it the other way around. Rabbi Yochanan says, "Well, he's such an expert, and we have no reason to assume up front that he didn't do what he." I think it's going to become a little bit clearer as we go along. So let's see what we can get out of it. Go ahead.
Minhag HaMakom would come into it.
That could be true. That could be true because sometimes the Minhag HaMakom is that a perfect uman who's got all this experience, should be held liable and responsible for a kilkul. That might be the Minhag HaMakom. But we have many cases in Halacha where the final determination of whether or not you should pay and how much you should pay is based on Minhag HaMakom. But at this point, I'm not going to assume that the machlokes between Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan really, boils down to what the minhag HaMakom was. He had one minhag and he had the other. Because again, Shmuel, the Gemara, I don't want to go through it again, but the Gemara worked very hard to try to see where did Shmuel find this precedent for the assumption that an Uman has to go to all ends of the world. And the last thing that we discussed was Niskal Poshea, and we mentioned Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. Rabbi Chanan was of the opinion that everyone who's walking in the streets is considered to be an Uman. He has all the experience, and he knows how to be careful when he walks through the street. And lo and behold, he tripped and he fell. And Rabbi Meir says he's Chayev. So the Gemara points out that Shmuel is standing on the shoulders of Rabbi Meir when he says that an Uman is Chayev. Because just like Rabbi Meir said that Niskal Posheahu, you and I would have said if he tripped and he fell, it must have been some extenuating circumstance and he's not liable, he's not responsible. No. Rabbi Meir says he's chayef for that. Comes along Shmuel and he says by equation I can derive from Rabbi Meir and Niskal that an Uman is also a Posheah. Because basically Niskal is nothing more than one case of an Uman. And Shmuel goes as far as to say that if an Uman messed up, it must be that he was Poshea. That's a very harsh, conviction? Is that the word? We're really convicting every Uman of being guilty. Rabbi Yochanan is not willing to say that. Rabbi Yochanan says it all boils down to the question whether he's paid for the Shmirah or he's not paid for the Shmirah. And if he's not paid for the Shmira, then we're going to assume it's a kind of an onus situation. Again, an onus only from the standard of a Shomer Chinam. From the standard of Shomer Sach, who's required to provide a higher level of Shmira, this is anything but an onus. It's not an onus at all. So again, whereas Shmuel is going to put all the emphasis on the fact that we expect an Uman to go all the way, and provide the best Shmira possible, Rabbi Yochanan says, no, that's not true. If he's paid for it, then he becomes upgraded to the level of a Shomer Sacha. Fine. Now we're up to Meisvei, am I right? Did I get that right? Yeah. So again, Lo Kasha Kan Bechinam Kan Besachar, and therefore, Ki Hodi Omer Abzera, Harotze She Yischayev Lo Hatabach. If a person gives an animal over to a Shochet, and he wants to make sure that the shochet will be responsible and will pay him in event that he was makalkel the shechita that became an avela. So the best I can recommend, says Reb Zera, if you want to be smart about it, chacham eino v'rosho, to anticipate the future, is yachdim lo dinar. Now this, Mitch, I think will address your question, because the phrase yachdim lo dinar seems to indicate that there's got to be a special payment here to upgrade the level of the Uman to that of a Shomer Sachar, such that it'll be Chayev even for what we thought was Onsim, but now that he's being paid and he has to upgrade the level of Shmir, that's not called an Onus at all. It's Kein Gneva Vaveda. Now there's a long discussion here in the Rishonim about whether or not this Tabach needs a special kinyan in order to upgrade him to the level of a shomer. Now, this touches on the laws of Shmira. For example, if I give you something to watch, you only become chayav through a through a kinyan. That's called a kabbalas achrayis, meaning achrayis doesn't come, you know, from nowhere. It doesn't self-generate spontaneously. You know, it requires a kinyan. Now, it could be that if the shomer says hanach lefonai, you know, just leave it in my possession, that itself is a kinyan, whether that's called a kinyan chotzer or some other kinyan. So the question here is, when Rav Zera says yakdim lo dinar, in other words, he wants to transform the tabach into a shomer sachar, he should give him a dinar. So the Rishonim want to know whether or not he needs a kinyan on the animal, right? He's about to shech the animal. Does he do what's called a mashicha, and he pulls the animal, or hagbo, when he lifts up the animal, in order to engender that chiyuv shmira and that kabbal sachrayas? And the Rama, the Yad Rama, who's one of the Chachmei Sfarad at the time of the Rishonim, he wants to say that the reason why Rabbi Zera insists on yakdim lo dinar, why not just have a verbal agreement in which he, and we're going to have that sugya right now, where he, the owner of the animal, says to the tabach, I expect you to do the best shechita that you can, and that you should be responsible for that animal. Says the Rama that in Hilcha Shmira, since there's a precondition that the shomer has to make a kinyan, then what Rav Zera wants to do is he wants to obviate the problem and the need for a maisa kinyan, meaning instead of the tabach having to schlep the animal or lift the animal or somehow cause the animal to jump up, he wants to avoid that and circumvent that. And he wants to guarantee that the owner of the animal will have an achrayus on the part of the shomer without having to do a kinyan. So what does he do? And the answer is he's got to give him a dinar. And what now, again, this raises eyebrows here in the later poskim, because usually we say that a movable object, which is called metaltolin, is not nikne with dinar, with kesef. Are you familiar with that? Mm-hmm. If you're learning a little Bava Metzia here and there, you'll know that the whole fifth perek of Bava Metzia, or maybe it's the fourth perek, which Hazov is the fourth or the fifth, I forget. Anyway, that whole perek is predicated on the assumption that for metaltolin, eina nikne bekesef b'matbea. So the question is here, if the Yad Rama wants to obviate the need for a kinyan on this behema, and therefore he advocates that the Bailim should give a dinar, well, I'll have you know, Yad Rama, that's not going to be effective to clinch a kinyan on metaltolin. But the answer, I believe, and again, there's a long discussion in the Achronim, is that according to some opinions, and apparently Yad Rama is accepting that, you have to know, Ipaskin, a dinar, a matbea, could serve as what's called a kinyan chalipin. Yeah. Now, in this case, the shomer is going to engender a kabbalas achrayus. And kabbalas achrayus, which means that he upgrades the level of his kriyav shmira, is something that can be effectuated, can be clinched through a kinyan sudar, a kinyan chalipin. And the reason for that is that it, unlike any other maisa kinyan, where I have to do a kinyan on the guf hachefetz, in the case of a shomer, although a kinyan on the guf hachefetz, meaning meshich and akbo, would certainly be valid, but nevertheless there may be other kinyanim that could be valid, like for example a kinyan chalipin, because the shomer has no intention to own the animal. You know, he's not a shoel. A shoel is like a bailim. But a shomer, whether he's a shomachinim or a shomasoch, doesn't have ownership over the animal, over the object. And therefore, his kabbal sachrayis is nothing more than what we call a shibut. A shibut is not something tangible. Again, you could make a shibut and acquire a shibut through hadbah and through mashicha on the animal. But if you want to offer another option, it could very well be that other kinyanim, other than what we call a kinyan beguf, might be sufficient, because we're not trying to acquire, have the uman, in this case the tabach, acquire ownership on the animal. We're trying to clinch a kabbalas achrayus, a responsibility that he will, if this event happens, he will replace the animal, he'll pay for the animal. So there could be that chiyuv could be established even by a dinar, according to the Yad Rama. I don't know.
I don't understand this particular case where it's a tabach who's going to shechita. There's no way that he can do that unless he somehow moves the animal. So, what you know, if he's going to do mashicha or lifting it up or do something, how's he going to check the animal?
I hear what you're saying. Yo.
Why do they need to go to this level?
He says here again, Kasav Yad Rama, the Po'omim Eina Tabach Moshech O Magbia Esabehema.
How's he going to check that?
Veshomer tzarich kinyan, and they'll fichach tzarich lahakdim lo dinar. That's the language he quotes in the Yad Rama. So I don't know what he means by that. I don't know enough about shechita. I mean, I was once invited to a shechtois, but I didn't. I'm a little bit queasy, so I didn't go.
But
I think in today's shechtoisim. Shlachtoism, I don't think the Tabach actually
touches the animal.
No, I mean, he touches the animal through the socking, because yeah. I think they have a system where they move the animals. Now, did that happen back in the day? I simply don't know. You know,
because you can do shechita, on a korban, right? And a zar can do a shechita. Obviously, he didn't go inside and take the behemah or anything. He just reached in and did the shechita. So.
Right, but is that the case that the Yad Rama is talking about? But in any event, he says Po'omim Eina Tavach Moshech Omagbiya. So we'll accept that at face value. Meisve. Now we have a Brisa. This Brisa is coming from Masechta Bava Basra, and Hamolech Chitin Litchon. So let's just give a little bit of background to the laws of grinding. I don't mean the laws of grinding. That's for Masechta Shabbos. But I mean the requirements of a grinder, a tochen. Now, I have wheat. The wheat is covered by a klipa, otherwise known as a kernel, a chaff. And I can't, unless I'm a professional, I don't know what is the step-by-step process or how to implement that process in order to create flour. You need, number one, what's called lesisa. Lesisa generally means that you pour hot water on the kernel to soften it. After that process is done, then we get to a second stage in the process, which is called ketisha. And in ketisha, we remove the chaff, we remove the kernel from the flour. And then in the third stage, we can do tchina, and we're able to grind down the flour. So this is a whole process that has many parts to it. And a person pays someone, or at least hires someone. When I say hire, maybe he gives it to him for free. Again, we'll have to discuss that. For tchina purposes. And he's got, in order to get to the final stage of tchina, in which he converts the wheat into flour, and again, he wants the finest flour that he can get. That's called, in Lashon Kodesh, soles nekia. Then we've got to go through all these stages. Lesisa, and Ketisha. The Gemara, for example, in the third parak of Pesachim goes through all these stages in order to determine at what point the wheat may become chametz, because as soon as you pour water on the wheat, it might be machmetz. And the Gemara goes on to say that lesisa doesn't cause chimutz because it's very hot, or because it's not yet ground into a flour. Fine. Anyway, the lo losasan. Now, this particular professional failed to do what he had to do, meaning to first do lesisa, so that afterwards he can do what's called ketisha, to remove the klipa, and guarantee that what he creates at the end is called solus nekia. And at the end, vasan subin omursan. Subin omursan are different kinds of flour that are not fine. Right, they have the mixture of the bran in them, which is great if you're on an all bran diet, but it's not what he wanted. You know, he wanted solus nekia. He wants good white bread. You know, that's what he wants. Now the Gemara has another case. The Bryce has another case. Kemach lenachtom vaso pasni polin. He gave flour. The flour was already prepared by the tochen, but he gave it now to a baker to make a bread. And instead of making him a good, solid bread, you know, that's hard and that's durable, he made it into a pasni polin, which is a kind of a, well, I don't have the English here, but I think a pasni polin is some sort of a soft bread that crumbles, a crumbly bread, I guess you'd say. What is, David, you have a?
Crumbly.
A crumbly bread. Oh, how do you like that? I figured it out on my own. Okay, I don't always do that, but, okay. Next, the third case in the Brice is Behemel Atabach. He gave his animal over to a shochet, v'nivla, and it became nevela. And the Brice of Paskins, in all these three cases, chayav, mipnei shehu kinose schar. Now, what is that chaf, what's called in grammar, chaf adimya, what does that indicate? Was he paid or was he not paid? Don't fall into my trap. He was not paid. Otherwise, if he was paid, then you would say he is a nosei schar. Why does he add the extra chaf? The answer is that he has the same responsibility to provide the best possible service that he could and implement the actions that he's meant to do. And he's not going to be able to claim I'm an anus, which, had he not been paid, normally a shomer chinam would not be chayav. But here we're going to give him the upgrade into the status of a nosei sachar, even though he's not being paid. And what that means, and this would be a great support for the sheet of Shmuel, but it's a kash on Rabbi Yochanan, that every uman is required to provide that, you know, the Rabbi Meir kind of shmira, of niskal posheh, if you remember Rabbi Meir. And if he doesn't go to all ends to guarantee that he did everything step by step, exactly as an uman is meant to do it, the baker apparently messed up over here, because what ended up is this crumbly bread, not the sturdy bread, you know, that you get when you you buy a challah, you know, so you hope that the challah is again, when I say hard, I don't know, durable, I don't know what word to use. It's like, it can't be too hard, because then, you know, like my wife eats this thing called biscotti. You know what I'm talking about? These mandelbrots. Yeah. You know, I eat them. I break my teeth on them.
Zwieback.
What's it called?
Zwieback.
In what language? That's Hebrew?
It's Yiddish.
Yiddish. Oh, Zwieback. Okay. So she loves that stuff. But I don't go for that hard stuff. But on the other hand, on the other extreme, if you give me a piece of bread that crumbles in my hands, that's not what a baker is meant to produce. So let's just, before you question, Michael, just so we're all on board here, you know, my own brain has to get on board here. What we're seeing here in this Braisa is that an uman is considered to be a poshea if he didn't supply the highest level, provide the highest level of shmira, that which is commonly associated with the shomer sachar. And if you'll answer, well, that's not a problem for Rabbi Yochanan, because Rabbi Yochanan admits that if he's paid for his shmira, or if in Rabbi Zera says yachtim lo dinar, then he is obligated to provide the higher level of protection. That's impossible, because the Braisa doesn't tolerate that pshat. I know for sure up front that the Braisa is talking about a case where the human is not being paid for his shmira. All right, it says kino se sachar. And kino se socha would indicate that he's not being paid, and afal pichein, he's going to be liable, because an uman should provide the best of the best, and if he messed up, is he glad milso, we have to assume that he didn't do what he had to do. Michael?
So, where we are now is that actually, according to this price, it doesn't matter whether you pay him or not pay him, that's irrelevant.
Correct.
He's just treated as though he's being paid.
Correct. And that's the sheet of Shmuel, because Shmuel, based on Reb Meir, says that even if you're an uman, and therefore we should presume you did everything that you had to do, but the proof is in the pudding. We look at the ultimate situation here, there's a kilkul, is vaistais, we learn from this kilkul that you did not provide the umnus that you should have, and therefore you have a din of a poshea such that even b'tar shomer chinam you're going to be chayv. You remember? Because the shomer chinam is chayv for basic level pshia, and this kind of pshia, according to the Braisa and according to Shmuel, is a basic level pshia. It's not a pshia on a more sophisticated level within the context of a shomer sachar, who accepted upon himself or made a kinyan to obligate himself in a higher level of shmira. No, it has nothing to do with that. Forget about payment here. we're not dealing with the Shomer Sachar. He's at best the Shomer Chinam, but nevertheless, he was a Poshea. Rabbi Yochanan says, nay. Rabbi Yochanan says he only becomes a Poshea if he was paid and he accepted upon himself a higher level, a higher standard of Shmira. What are we going to do with this Brisa? And the answer is, we're going to have to take out one letter from the Brisa, right? Amo, we're going to have to say it, Neshahu, no say, Sachar. That the case that the Brisa was addressing was a case of an Uman who was being paid. And again, Mitch is going to ask his question, what does it mean he's being paid? Is he being paid for the umnus? And willy-nilly, we assume that's included, in, you know, swallowed up in that payment for the umnus is payment for Shmira. Or, as Rav Zera said before, you gave him a special dinar in order to clinch the kinyan of a Shomer Socher. I don't know. But what I do know is that in order to defend Rav Yochanan, we're going to have to assume that the Bryce is addressing a case where he was paid for Shmira. And that makes him into a Shomer Sachar. And this level, despite his umnus of Kilkul, is considered a Pshia for whom? Pshia relative to whom? To a Shomer Sachar. Relative to the higher level of Shmira. But in the absence of payment, if he was just a Shomer Chinam, he would be put. That's Rabbi Yochanan Shita, and that's how the Gemara wants to reinterpret the Bryce. Frankly, I'm not a happy player because I don't see that you can just take a brisa and, you know, at whim, you know, for the sake of desperation, you know, just drop a letter.
God does do that when he's got no other choice.
Correct. And maybe this fits into that case. But what I want to share with you today is a chiddush from the Toras Chaim. The Toras Chaim was one of the great achronim, especially in the Bavos. He lived about 150 years ago. And he doesn't think that when the Gemara says Ema Shomer Sachar, it means we have to take out the Chaf. He assumes that we have the Chaf, even Lamaskana, and he is being paid. I'm sorry, and he's not being paid. And nevertheless, Rabbi Yochanan would hold that he's Chayav. Now, let me read to you the punchline of the Toras Chaim. It's quoted here in the Masifta, in the footnote. And he says the following. He says, when the Gemara is absolutely desperate and is forced to reformulate the Brice and change the version that we have, it always adds, consistently always adds one word. And that's Tni. Have you ever seen it? If you do a word search, you know, on Bar Ilan and Shas to the word Tni, it'll come up thousands of times. Tni no se sachar, which means take out the chaf. So this gives us a very interesting methodology. You know, if some of you, I think, are familiar with Dachei Noam Chappelle, I think, David, no, Michael, you. So, you know, in certain yeshivas, they are very careful about how to read the language of the Gemara. This Toras Chaim says that if you want to know what's the code or the key to figure out whether the Gemara is changing the gears or not, look for the word Tni, and if it doesn't appear, then it means we're not changing the verse. That's a Derech HaLimud that we want to point out. But I'm more interested in the lumdus of it. He says the following. Ein kavonas haGemara sheyesh la'agias haBraisa. So we're not going to reformulate the Braisa. Ela hakavonas haGemara hi lomar shemasha kosva Braisa mipnei shu kinose sochar hakavonavi shebimikrim elu. In these three cases that are singled out in the Braisa, Nechshavim kinose schar, even though they're not being paid, they're considered as a shomer sochar. Afal pishu behemes eno mekablim schar. Okay, so now we have to ask ourselves the question: what's unique about these three cases, where we upgrade the level of achrayis to that of a shomer sochar, even though he's not being paid? And he says the following: there's the tabach, the nachtom, and the tochen. Those are the three cases. He says these three cases are singled out. This is not a universal rule, because universally Rabbi Yochanan insists that it depends whether he's paid or he's not paid. And if he's not paid, he's not chayav for the kilkul, because that's that on the level of a shomer soch, of a shomer chinam, excuse me, is considered ones. Why in these three categories is he considered a shomer socher and he's a poshe on the level of a shomer socher, even though he's not being paid? He says, Dafka bofanim elu, afal pisha eno mekablim schar lavodosom, dinom kinosim schar, kinosei schar, mishum shebe umnim elu, in these cases. Okay, I'm afraid to read the next few words, because I thought I was, you know, I was going to say something here. Can I tell you what I would have said if not for the Torah Chaim? I would have said that what's unique about these three cases is that, excuse me, that there's a step-by-step process which is mandated by the profession itself. Do A, and then do B, and then do C. And in the case of a nachtom, you know, the baker has to do X, Y, and Z, and that's going to guarantee that his bread will be hard. In the case of a shochet, we're going to soon see that the shochet didn't necessarily follow the rules. That's going to be called hagrama. Fine. But he says something else. Unbelievable. I don't know. I'm afraid to share this with you. It's so revolutionary. I don't know how he could get away with it. He says, Be'umnus elu haregilusi shenotlim schar beguf hamalocha va'braisa mechadeshes she'afal gav she'eino notel schar, correct, even though he wasn't paid, yesh l'chaivam al hakilkul kevon she'im malachtom lo isim iskalkeles hayu notlim schar nimtso she'ze schara. Okay, so let me try to translate to the best of my knowledge, what he says over here. It's a revolution of sorts. He says the following: as a general rule, these professionals are paid for guf malachta. Okay, guf malachta. We have to figure out what he means by guf malachta. Says the Tanakama of this price, the Tan of this price, that the Uman is not going to be paid. In other words, the agreement was that he would be paid. Right? He's not learning the buddy system that I said. But Lamaisa, he's not going to be paid. Why is he not going to be paid, even though the agreement was that he should be paid? Because he messed up. Once he's Mekalkel, he loses his rights to be paid. Okay. Ulech Ora, if not for the Chiddush of the Braisa, Dinam Kisho Mechinam. Because now, once he's Mekalkel, he's not going to be paid. Afal Pichen, nevertheless, he's going to be paid. I'm sorry, he's going to be liable for payment to compensate as if he were paid, even though, again, he's not going to be paid. Yesh l'chayvam l'shalem ala kilkul kevon she'im hoysa malachtam b'li kilkul. Had they not messed up, is hayu notlin schar, they would be paid. Nimtza she'heim nichshavim kishomer sachar. Let's try to understand what he's saying. He's saying there's a theoretical payment and there's an actual payment. And the level of responsibility is to be determined not by the actual payment, but by the theoretical payment. Again, he doesn't use that word. That's Berzon speaking. But what I mean by the theoretical payment is, my friend, you can't lower the level of your responsibility because you're Mekalkel. You know, that's called a Chote Miskar. You know, we're not going to give you the, a present, win the first prize because you're Mekalkel. Meaning, in the agreement itself, when you receive the animal or the kemach or the chitim, that agreement was such that this payment in the agreement, because that's what we assume. We're not talking about a buddy situation where I say to you, hey, I tap you on the back and say, David, you have a couple extra minutes today, do me a favor, bake my bread. That's not the scenario. You're a professional baker, and I have to pay you for baking my bread. In this case, I'm not going to pay you. But I'm kinose schar. It's as if you were paid. Why? Because we're not going to allow you to reduce the level of your responsibility simply because in Befal, in actuality, you aren't paid. You're not going to be paid. I can withhold my money. Why'd I have to pay you for Umnus if you didn't produce the goods? I'm not going to pay you for a service if you didn't provide that service. At the end, what you did was give me a nevela, you gave me a pas nipolin, or you gave me some good soup if I was on a brand diet. I'm not going to pay you for your work. But you have no right to say that, mamela, if you're not paying me, then I'm a shomer chinam. That right you don't have. Because what's built into the original agreement, like any agreement with an uman, is that you'll be paid for it. I'm not going to pay you until you produce the goods. Right, we've discussed this on many occasions. Like, for example, in Uman Kodav Shvach Kli, the Uman gives the Kli with the Shvach, and then he gets paid for it. I'm not going to pay you for the Nevela, I'm going to pay you for a Bas of Shachot. I'm not going to pay for that kind of pass, I want to pay you for this kind of pass. Right? So I'm going to withhold my payment. But at the same time, what's inherent, essentially, in the agreement, when you took the Umnus and received this animal to Shech, is a Nosei Sachar. Is a payment. That was the kind of advice.
Yes.
Now, what do we gain from this, Rav Hosai? Besides the sheer brilliance of this Chiddush of the Toras Chaim, from my mind, it solves a problem. There's no need to change the gear. So the word Tni was omitted deliberately. He's Kinos Eisachar. But why does Rav Yochanan accept this? Because Rav Yochanan will say that there are two types of scenarios. There's a scenario where the payment is assumed. In other words, as we go into this original arrangement, the understanding, the deal was that you're not doing it gratis, you're doing it for payment. And there's another kind of agreement, which is bechinam. In other words, I am asking you to shech this animal bechinam. When did Rav Yochanan say that an uman, a tabach shekilkel, is patur when it's bechinam, in a positive, in a kumbaseo is bechinam, meaning that was the nature of the agreement. But in the absence of that kind of an agreement of bechinam, the agreement is bischar, and the chiddush of the braisa is kinos eisachar, that despite the fact that he's not going to be paid, nevertheless his achrayus is that of a shomer sach.
So I'll be saying
it's very revolutionary.
If for some reason he had been paid and he's chayav, he has to pay two things. He has to return the fee and compensate.
That's a good point. Yeah, I'm not gonna allow you to take a fee for the umnus if you mekalkel the umnus. Now this really touches on a different question, and that is whether or not the payment here is for the effort, or the payment is for the final product. What do I mean to ask? What happens if I hire an uman and an absolute onus happens? So that in Hilchas Achrayus, let's say you'll be potter, because onus rachmana patre, but in Hilchas Umnus, do I have to pay him when he's not giving me the goods? Again, why isn't he delivering the goods? That's because the circumstances beyond his control. But nevertheless, tachlis, as we say, you know, in a very tangible way, I never received the umnus from you. So one could ostensibly argue that in the case of onus, I can still bill you for the umnus. Why? Because I made all the effort. At the end of the day, you know, lightning struck, what can I do? I'm not responsible for that. The other argument is to say, no, I'm not paying you for your efforts, even though I respect your efforts and kol hakavod, and you know, I'll give you an aliyah and shul and make a mishum berish for you and so on, but I'm not going to pay you for your efforts. I'm paying you for the final product. It's very reminiscent, but I don't think we should confuse it with the machlokas we had last week about whether yeshna l'schiris mitchil v'atzof or ein l'schiris el b'sof. You know, the philosophy, so to speak, of yesh l'schiris mitchil v'atzof is that I have to pay you for every piece of effort you do. That's not really true, because that's all conditional on the fact that at the end of the day you deliver the goods, you hand over, fork over this shida or whatever that you created from my wood. But if you worked for days and days, and again, I respect you and I owe you a debt of gratitude, but I'm not going to pay you in money, in monetary terms, if at the end you gave that, you know, that last makush, or even if maybe the lightning struck. But I think that the Taras Chaim here is understanding the nature of the agreement in such a way, because that's the Chiddush of the Braisa, that I don't have to pay you for your efforts. I have to pay you for your final, for your final product. And if you can't deliver that product, then Lamaisi should be a Shomer Chinuch. Kamash Malon, and this is the Chiddush of the Braisa, that since these are professionals which are, shall we say, consistently or classically paid for their work, then that's the nature of the agreement. Whether or not you get the payment is second.
And you started off by saying that he says it's because of these three examples, but there are many other examples.
Right.
So he would include those.
Correct. But the key of the keys is, and that's where the Braisa gave these three examples, is to establish that in these three cases is the regilus, which means the understanding is that he's going to be paid. Lamaisi wasn't paid, but he still has the level of a chrayus of a shomer socher.
So this changes the meaning of chinam to be chinam established in advance.
Right. A kubase kind of chinam.
Yeah.
You see, I'll tell you what I don't like about the Taras Chaim. We had early in the Gemara the case of knishta dima'on, and Rabbi Yochanan said that when he shechted this rooster, Rabbi Yochanan was the posek, and he said to the shochet, he says, you know what, prove to me that you're a mumcha. And if you're a mumcha, then I'll exempt you. And the Gemara insists that was the case of Bechina. So when I saw that Gemara, what I thought was that he wasn't being paid for the shechita. And since he's a mumcha, Rabbi Yochanan says he's a shomer chino. That's not the way the Taras Chaim understands that. Meaning, why not assume that a shochet tarnagolos is a classical Uman Tabach, which according to this Braisa, we establish that the nature of the agreement, the understanding is that he's going to be paid for it. And even though at the end of the day he's not being paid for it, he still has the level of a Shomer Sachar. So if Rabbi Yochanan is distinguishing between a Shomer Chinam and a Shomer Sachar, then in the case of the Tarnagolas, even if the Shochet is a Mumcha and he brings all the documentation to prove that, nevertheless he should be responsible. Because the Taras Chaim is saying that's exactly the Chiddush of the Braisa, that since as a general rule you pay a Tabach, then the agreement is that he is a Shomer Sachar. Why is the case of Tarnagolim different than the case in the Braisa? I mean, the Braisa has a case, let's read it again, Behema LeTabach. If it's a separate din in Behema as opposed to Tarnagolis, I don't see it. So that's what I find difficult with this Taras Chaim. But the loveness of it and the support for the Derech Aliwa that I mentioned is absolutely brilliant. All right. Hahu Magrumasa or Magrumta. Okay, now that's an Aramaic conjugation of the word Hagrama, which is a technical term. It refers to one of the five Psule Shechita that's studied in the first parak of Chulin. And it refers to the kana. You know, a shochet has to shed two parts of the animal, the kana and the veshet. The kana is where an air pipe?
A windpipe.
Excellent, a windpipe.
A trachea.
Okay, good. A trachea. Okay. What language is that trachea? Is that a Latin?
It's Latin or Greek.
Latin or Greek. Okay. It doesn't sound like an English word, but we incorporate it into the English language. Okay, a trachea. And the other one, the food pipe, is called the esophagus. That much I know, you know. So you have to shech rosh nayin, right? Most of these two simonim of the kana innovation. And that he did. But the problem was that sometimes kol hamosif goreh, in other words, you know, you quit while you're ahead. So had this shochet, when he got to the kana, stopped dead in his tracks when he shechted Rov Simon, everything would be kosher v'yosher. But unfortunately what he did, he continued in the shechita, and the last part of the shechita he did bagrama, right? Agrama means that when you're cutting one of the tabos of the trachea is made of tabos, and instead his knife sort of took a jump or went up or down, it doesn't matter, and he shechted it, you know, outside of the tabos, which is called chutz l'makom shechita, and that's called hagrom. It doesn't mean that he shechted in a different tabas. That's also agrama, but that's rare. You know, that's not really a mistake. I mean, in order to do that type of agrama, he would have had to lift up the sakin from one tabas and place it down in a different tabas. That's almost unheard of. You know, such a guy would be not only a poshe, I would call him a mazik mam, she did it for kavana. That's not our discussion. We're talking about a guy whose knife slipped, and it ended up between one tabas and the other, because the tabas goes on an incline, and then there's a cartilage that connects one tabas to the other. Anyway, so what's the deal here if you hire a tabach, and he does what's called hagroma? So now, if he did hagroma before he got to Rov Simon, then everybody agrees the animal is an avela, and the shechita is a shechita psula. However, there's a big machlokas tanoim, if he did this hagroma beyond Rov Simon. In other words, in the last miut of the Simon, because according to Rav Shimon, and this is a sugya at the beginning of Masechet Chulin, I'm sorry, according to Rav Yossi, I think Rav Shimon also agrees, but according to Rav Yossi, in such a case, the animal is not an avela. Correct? Why? Because he's already done what he has to do. Meaning, what he does beyond that is irrelevant. Why? Because that would be a psul in the chalos shechita, not in the maisa shechita. Meaning, wait, did I say that right? Let me just get that straight. According to Rabbi Yossi, that's a psul in the chalos shechita. Meaning, the hagroma. Would have to be a psul in the chalos shechita, correct? In the chalos shechita, according to Rav Yossi. And at what point, at one moment in time, is the chalos shechita chal?
Yeah, is it when he finishes, or is it when he already?
No, he doesn't have to finish. The chalos shechita is chal. Let's say you took a bite out of this meat after he shechted Rov Simon. Would you be chayef and avela or Abraham and Achai or anything like that? No. Why? Because the chalos shechita is chal immediately at the moment of Rov Simon. And therefore Rabbi Yossi says, since hagrama is a psul in the chalos shechita, meaning it undermines and voids the chalos shechita, it can't be chal after Rov Simon by definition. So this animal is kosher v'yosher. Come along the chachamim and they say, nay. The psul of hagroma is in the maisa shechita. And the maisa shechita continues, if he so decides to continue it, nobody forced him to, until he finishes the actual maisa shechita. So even though the chalos shechita was chal, there still could be a new psul, which again Rav Yossi finds this intolerable, in the maisa shechita. Okay then? So if you're following with me now. Now, the truth is that la halacha, even though the chachamim insist that this animal is an avela because of this new halacha of psula in the maisa shechita, the maisa shechita continues even after Rov Simon. It's not 100% clear la halacha that that's how we paskin, because Rav Yossi's argument is considered by the Gemara a very powerful argument. So that now, if we want to know whether the Uman should be responsible and liable to compensate the owner of the animal because he messed up the Shechita, we're really getting into a very serious suffix. How can you force the Uman to pay out of pocket when, at least according to Rav Yossi, he did a perfectly good Shechita? The fact that he decided to continue the Shechita beyond Rov Simon and then he messed up with Hagrama, who cares? You know, maybe the shochet, the tabak got distracted. You know, you'll start thinking about the fact that he didn't get a good night's sleep last night. But that he's allowed to do because he's already done Rov Simon according to Rav Yossi. So let him be distracted. If he was distracted, that's not called negligence. But on the other hand, la halacha l'maisa, we're in trouble with this animal because we have to worry about the shitas chachamim. So in Hilchas Issa Veheta, we certainly have to paskin Safek Issa L'chumra, and we're not allowed to eat this meat. But But if you ask me, did the Uman mess up or not? Well, that depends on the machlokas, and now you want to force him to pay. Now, what happens in Dini Monos when we have a suffix? What's the overriding rule, as we discussed many times? Hamotzim. So you go prove to me, Mr. Owner of the Animal, that I messed up the Shechita, because you want to say we passing like the Chachamim. Well, since this issue is still outstanding, and we don't know if we passing like Chachamim or like Rabbi Yossi, so then you can't force me to cough up the money and pay. But in any event, what we're going to see now from this entire case is that an Uman is responsible when he messes up the Shechita, unless you can assume that he was paid. And if he was paid, then you have to get into the whole issue. Do we assume, like the brisa that we had before, that even if at the end of the day he's not going to be paid because he messed up the umnus, but nevertheless the agreement was such that he should pay? I'm just from the perspective of the Torah's Chaim. So what happened in this case? The question came up in front of Rav. The Asa Kamei L'Kami de Rav Vitarfei. In other words, Rav was saying that we pass him like the Chachamim, or at least we have to be worried about the Shitas Chachamim. That'll become clear in just a second. And therefore we cannot eat the meat. Mm-hmm. But you know what? The owner of the animal really wasn't intending to eat the meat. That's not why he came to Rav. He wanted Rav to pass it on a different question, namely what? Does the Tavach have to compensate him? And then Rav gave another statement. Upatre l'tavach milishlumei dami. And he exempted the tabach from paying. This sounds very strange at the face of it. Because how can you tell me that it's treif and then pater up the uman? Is pogu bei Rav Kahana v'Rav Asi b'hu gavra? They met this owner of the animal, and the owner of the animal related to them what Rav had paskin. Amrulei and Rav Kahana and Rav Asi turned to the owner of the animal and they said, Ovid Bach Rav Tarte. Now, the way the Gemara understands that statement at this point is that there's a contradiction, Mineu Bei, in that Haurah. Mimanashach. If the Uman did not mess up, then the animal's not treif, you can eat it. And if the animal is treif and you can't eat it, then the Uman messed up. So, how could Rav say, Dover Vipucho? How can he say something and then contradict himself? My tarti, ilema tarti ligreusa. If it means that Rav messed up in his psak because he's contradicting himself, and why is he contradicting himself? The boyle lachshuri Rav Yosi Rav Yehuda. Ah, the Gemara. I'm sorry, I went too far here. The Gemara at this point is insisting that Rav, according to this accusation, made a mistake because he passed like the Chachamim, and we accept the Shita Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that since he shechted Rov of the Kane, it's kosher. The Shita is a Shita Kshera, even though he was Yotzi Chutz Mimkomo after the Rov Shnayim. Is Vitirfak Yerabonin, he had no right to pass him like the Chachamim, that this animal is treif and the Shechita is a Shechita Psula. So I think if we would stop here, I don't know, you know, maybe Rav has the, you know, has the right to pass him like the Chachamim against Rabbi Yossi, because as a general rule, Yochid V'Rabim Halacha, Halacha K'Rabim. Now comes the Mimonavshach. V'i Nami K'Rabonin, and if, let's say, I would grant Rav the license to paskin like the Chachamim to make the animal treifa, but iboyle lechiyuvi letabcha. But at least, if that be the case, then the natural conclusion is that the tabach messed up. He was matriv to the animal, and therefore he should have to pay. That was what I mentioned before. So the Gemara says, umi shari lememar ki haygavna. How could it be that Rav Kahana and Rav Asi met the Baldovar as he came out of the Horaz Bezdin and told him that the Dayan made a mistake. Vasan, you have a Bryson Mesech the Sanhedrin, when the Dayan comes out of Sanhedrin, Lo Yomar, don't talk to the Baldin and say, Ani Mizake v'chaveir mechayvin, you got messed up, you got the wrong Dayan. If it was up to me, I would have been Mizake you. This is what you call the dissenting view. I know in American law, you know, those who study history and the history of law, that they're more interested in the dissenting view, because usually what happens over the course of time is that the dissenter has such an eloquent presentation of his dissenting view that eventually becomes embodied into the law itself. So, for example, when I was in graduate school, I took three courses in constitutional law, and 90% of what we did was to study the dissenting views. That's where all the good loveness is, in the dissenting views. So what the Gemara is saying is that you walk out of Beis Din and you say, you know, it's too bad that I was the dissenter here and I couldn't, you know, impact and influence my colleagues on the court to accept my view, because you would end up a rich man. I would have been mizaki you. That you're not allowed to say. Why? Al zenemar holech rachil megalasot. In other words, a decision of Beis Din in Sanhedrin has to be remain a silent ballot. What's it called? A private ballot? Whatever the word is.
Secret ballot.
That's what I meant to say. Secret ballot. You know, we don't reveal who said what. You can imagine, you know, in cases of dini mominus, lawsuits that involves, you know, significant sums, imagine what's going to be with reputation or even the physical well-being. You know, we have what's called a witness protection project. You know, we need a real Sanhedrin protection project, you know. So we have to keep that secret. So what's going on over here with Rav Kahana and Rav Asi? I mean, they go out publicly saying, you know, we would have passed for you differently. That's Megalas Sod. Elo, but rather Tarte Lamal Yisah. What they meant when they said Tarte was not Legrei Yisah, but Lamal Yisah. In other words, we applaud Rav's Psak. Why? Because there are two dinim over here. This is what we call a brisket tzvei dinim. He says, "Delo ochlach." When he said to you, Rav, that you're not allowed to eat this meat, is sofek isura. I'll add the word lahachmir, right? Sofek doraisa lechumra. Umanach mi sofek zela. But at the same time, he wanted to protect you from getting involved in a sofek zela, which means that basically, when he potted up the shochet for payment, he didn't want you, Mr. Owner of the animal, to violate the Isuk Zela, at least in a Suffolk, by saying that, you know what, we paskin halacha like the Chachamim, that he, the Shochet, was match of the animal. No, because maybe we paskin like Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, who's match of the animal. And therefore, mitzad Suffolk, although we have to prohibit the eating of the animal, but as far as the payment or the compensation is concerned, we have to go the other way around. And we have to assume that maybe the halach is like Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda. He's not guilty of any sort of violation. And again, I would assume here that if we would have clearly, shall we say, indisputably paskin l'halach l'chachamim, then the assumption here of Rav is that we would have been mechayev the shochet to pay. According to Rav Yochanan, I can't tell you that Rav holds like Rav Yochanan, but just in case he does, then we would have to add the following stipulation, that this tabach is a shomer sachar, he's been paid, or alternatively, if we take the Taras Chaim and the Braisa, then a tabach is always considered a shomer sachar, because that's the nature of the agreement, unless we're proven otherwise, you know, like a bechinam kind of situation. Itmar, hamare dinar l'shulchani. You know, back in the day when they would mint coins, after a certain period of time, the mint would get blurred a little bit, and there were legal issues as to whether or not such a coin, we'll call it a dinar, is considered legal tender or not, recognized as legal tender. And believe it or not, the average citizen cannot determine whether or not it is viable or not viable. You need what's called a baki, a mumcha, an absolute expert. And the case of a money changer is the case of that expert. So when I go to the Shulchani, I'm going to rely upon him. If he tells me that this is legal tender, then I'm going to accept it as payment, or alternatively I'll give it as payment, but more relevant is when I accept it as payment based on his word. Now, if you want to buy my cow, correct? So I take the dinner that you offer me and I bring it to the Shulchani. It's like when I buy an esrog, first I want to get the psak that the esrog is kosher. And if the Shulchani tells me that this is a dinar tov, then I rely on the Shulchani. Nimtzara, so the Shulchani told him it was good, and lo and behold, it turns out that it's illegal. So what do we do with the Shulchani? Does he have to pay? Does he not have to pay? It fits mamish into our pattern of an uman shekilkel. Tani chadu, we have one brisa that says uman patur, which is very good if you accept the shita that we are lenient with regard to an uman because we consider it as onus. Again, you'll have to convince me that in this case there was some onus. Right? What could be the onus here? When he messed up on identifying the coin, but hedjot chayev, okay, and the hedjot is chayev. V'tanya idok. Another brayse says bein uman ubein hedjot chayev. So we'll, emirtz Hashem, in the next year we'll try to embark upon reconciling this lechora stira between two brayses. Yeah, the one who's going to answer this is going to be Rav Papa. Okay, fine.
Another problem?
Yeah, no, everything's good. I'm going to just go with Dab Mincha now.
Yeah.